Even though the Office of Personnel Management is responsible for the biggest breach to federal employee data in history, it is by no means the only agency having a tough time addressing cyber vulnerabilities. The number of cybersecurity incidents government-wide is up from about 5,500 in fiscal 2006 to more than 67,000 in fiscal 2014. Information security has been on the Government Accountability Office's high-risk list since 1997. Greg Wilshusen is the Director of Information Strategic Issues at the GAO. He testified recently before the House Science, Space, and Technology Subcommittees on Research and Technology and Oversight, and he joins us now to summarize some of GAO's concerns over the years. Hi, Greg. Thanks for coming on.
How are you doing, Jared? It's a pleasure to be here.
Great, thanks. And as you pointed out last week, almost all of the 24 CFO Act agencies had weaknesses in what GAO calls the five key security control categories. I realize this is an impossible question to summarize in a radio interview, but why are these basics like hardware and software configuration management and making sure only legitimate users are allowed on the systems? Why are those issues so widespread after so many years of GAO and IG reports warning that they need to be addressed?
It's probably a combination of reasons, Jared. First and foremost, you know, there's an inherent risk associated with federal systems, in part because they are very complicated, dynamic, and complex. And that complexity inherently adds risk in order to be able to maintain all of them sufficiently. For example, to first of all, know what devices and systems you actually have an accurate inventory of those, but then to make sure that those systems and devices are properly patched in a timely manner and that the current versions of operating systems are being used. The other inherent risk, if you will, is that many federal systems are based upon the use of software that is known to contain numerous vulnerabilities and defects. It's just the way the software development industry, if you will, has been developed over the years, that product goes out and is being used by federal agencies as well as any organization to a large extent, and the software contains vulnerabilities that are being discovered over time. And so it's a continuous process for agencies to maintain that. The other side of the coin is just the operational aspects, and that while information security is primarily a management issue, there needs to be appropriate policies and practices and indeed processes in place to assure that the proper security controls are indeed being implemented and that agencies do include and incorporate some of the newer technologies that are available to better protect their systems.
Well, when it comes to incorporating those modern security technologies, encryption, for example, agencies will often say that's nice, but it's easier said than done, in the sense that if you try to bolt these improvements onto aging legacy systems, everything's just going to grind to a halt. Is there something to that?
Well, yes, I think there is. There is, particularly with encryption, there is a cost to implementing that. But what we also need to consider is that these systems, while some are legacy and old, many of them are being replaced and updated. And as these systems are being replaced and updated, that agencies take appropriate actions to ensure that these newer types of controls, and not even saying that encryption is new, because by no means is it a new control, but that encryption and the multi-factor authentication capabilities, and which means that they require usually more than one form of identification, if you will, something in order to gain access to a system, and also the intrusion detection and prevention capabilities are implemented into their security networks.
And just because our time is limited, I want to pivot into those three things you just mentioned that you also called out in your testimony, where agencies are trying to improve the two-factor authentication, the CDM, and Einstein. Starting with two-factor authentication, the PIV cards, I think it was 2004 when HSPD 12 was signed? I don't think we've achieved...
Yeah, it's been a while,
yeah.
and certainly it's been a requirement for a number of years that agencies implement this capability. And what the OMB reported as of the end of last fiscal year, that only 41% of the user accounts at the 23 federal civilian agencies had implement this multi-factor authentication or the use or required the use of these credentials.
And in the case of OPM, I think the number is they have only implemented 1% so far.
Yes, that's as of the end of fiscal year 14, and that's what OMB reported in its annual report to the Congress for FSMA implementation. Now, I understand that OPM has been making a concerted effort since then to try to improve that.
From what we know of the method of entry in these most recent hacks, it was that whoever the adversary was stole login credentials from a contractor who had access to the system. Is it going too far to say that this attack could not have happened if there were two-factor authentication in place, or at least would have been a lot harder?
Yes, I think that's not going too far to say at least that it would have been a lot harder. Certainly, you know, the use of two-factor authentication, including for example, the PIV card, personal identity verification card, would have raised the bar for an attacker who may have compromised user credentials at the contractor. It would have made it much harder for him the attacker to use those at OPM. And indeed, in testimony a couple weeks ago, an official from the Department of Homeland Security mentioned that indeed it kind of thwarted the escalation of that report, the expansion of that attack at OPM when one of the applications required multi-factor authentication, that it basically thwarted the attacker from gaining access to that particular application.
Okay, so that's pretty good evidence that that's a barrier to entrance by an adversary. On the second point, continuous diagnostics and mitigation, describe a little bit about what that is, where you think the government is in terms of implementation and how effective it is.
Well, continuous diagnostics and mitigation or continuous monitoring is a program and initiative that's right now being run out of the Department of Homeland Security, in which it's providing tools along with GSA for agencies to scan their systems and devices regularly for vulnerability assessments and patches and the like. And I think that will help, if properly implemented at the agencies, that it could help agencies to identify the vulnerabilities on their systems, such as unpatched software and systems that are out of date or no longer being supported by the vendors. And that's one of the areas that we consistently identify as a prevalent problem throughout the federal government. By identifying that, the program will also help agencies to prioritize their corrective actions, and hopefully we'll be able to address them in a more timely manner. But there could be limitations to that, and indeed we will be taking a look at the implementation of continuous monitoring across the federal government in the future. We've been requested to look at that by the Committee on Homeland Security and Governmental Affairs.
And in that vein, I think DHS got some new authorities in the FSMA update last year that says if an agency doesn't fix problems that are identified through CDM, DHS can order them to. Do we have any idea so far? I know it's a new authority, but so far, do we have any idea if that's having an impact and how it's being used?
Well, as far as I know, I believe there's been one binding operational directive, which is what you're referring to, that has been issued. But I think that might be more in response to, at least broadly, to taking actions to implement known vulnerabilities.
And finally, before we go, the third leg of this government-wide approach is the Einstein system, broken up into three different iterations here. I think they're now rolling out 3A. From GAO's perspective, how is that going, and is it helping?
Well, we're certainly taking a look at Einstein now, and our review is ongoing. And so, but at least as far as what I testified, our preliminary observation shows that there is some utility and usefulness to Einstein, but there are also some limitations. And the limitations relate to the type of traffic that it is monitoring, and the scope at which and the number of agencies at which Einstein 3A has been deployed to date.
And I think one of the critiques, and I'm paraphrasing your testimony here, so let me know if I get it wrong, but I think the way DHS has set it up, even in the newest iteration, is that they're really only using one of the three methodologies that NIST says you can and should use to identify malicious traffic. Is that about right?
Yes, that is right. And indeed, to have a fully effective intrusion detection prevention capabilities, NIST recommends having using concepts of all three of those versions. And indeed, one thing to point out, too, is that each of these initiatives in and of themselves are not going to be the silver bullet, so to speak, in protecting the agency systems, but they are another layer and a tool that can help agencies more effectively secure their systems as part of a defense-in-depth strategy, which has multiple layers of security, both provided, say, by Einstein to help detect and prevent certain types of attacks, but also the controls implemented by agencies through their own intrusion prevention and prevention capabilities and other controls that they should be implementing.